In the Western world, even an archaeologist with a great sense of time misses a bus if his watch is running slow. And anyone can contemplate the fragile beauty etched on the Parthenon by the passing of thousands of years, but live a frantic life ruled by the clock. So, what does the passing of time really mean in our day-to-day lives? Jay Griffiths doesn't know for sure, but she's got some ideas. Griffiths traveled around the world studying time in different cultures and social settings. She wrote about it in her book, A Sideways Look at Time. Why sideways? Because most Westerners have a pretty rigid concept of time that could use some re-examining.
What I'm trying to look at is to say, well, time as an empire has also been imposed on people. And it's not just that kind of starting from Britain and, you know, spreading out across the world, that there has been a kind of imperialism of time with the Christian calendar and the specifically originally British clock, you know, the Greenwich Mean Time, which began all the kind of business of deciding that there was such a thing as the time, when I would argue there are thousands of times across the world. But in fact, the idea of time as power is even deeper than that. I mean, it's something where almost every culture that's ever wanted to seize power over any other culture has dominated its sense of time. For instance, the ancient Chinese empires, when they wanted to describe the fact that they had colonized some new territory, they said that that region had received the calendar.
You've done quite a lot of research, as a matter of fact, into other kinds of times, I guess alternatives to Western times.
Yes.
There was one... Little pig time and big pig moons. Can you explain that to me?
Yes, this is in part of Indonesia. When I was researching the book, I read hundreds of books, but I also traveled to a lot of places to talk to people in the Amazon, in the Arctic, in Thailand, because I really wanted to know, you know, what do you think, you know, when you live in the jungle, when you live on the ice, you know, how does time seem to you? The big pig moon and the little pig moon was in Indonesia. The moons are not... They're not called like the 11th and the 12th nights of the moon's growing, which is what we would term it in our sort of much more numerical way of thinking. But they're very descriptive ideas of the moon's strength, because what happens is that as the moon grows, the pigs and piglets get sort of moonstruck and, you know, squeakily overexcited, and they bundle out of their pens and go cavorting everywhere. So it happens on a kind of on a monthly cycle. And I find that intricacy of tying time to nature immensely subtle and very local and funny.
You did find in many cultures that you visited and studied that they told time, if you will, by the world around them, I guess, which is different from applying a clock and a calendar to it.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. One of the things with the San Bushmen, for instance, is that they say that the wind and the insects are timekeepers, because you can tell the dating of an animal's tracks by how the wind's affected and how insects have crept over some parts of it. There are many other cultures which, for instance, if they're hunter-gatherer cultures, will need to use a much less scheduled, much less planned sense of time. Not because they're sort of fey and hopeless, because actually, very often when hunter-gatherer people refuse to plan, refuse to schedule, and do it when, you know, when the moment feels right, or the San Bushmen say, when the moment feels lucky, they're doing it for very good reason, which is that there are all sorts of considerations that have to be taken into account when you go hunting. You know, the kind of migrations of animals, that there are weather conditions to be taken into account, how many people would go with you and how that affects where you might go. Also, I think that it promotes a kind of sensitivity to time, which arguably we've lost.
Is it fair to call those different ways of perceiving time clocks? I mean, can you have, for instance, a clock of birds or a...
Oh, absolutely. The Kaluli people in Papua New Guinea do have a clock of birds. They've got a bird, the brown oriole, I think it is, that in the morning will tell, you know, will call people to get up, and there's a particular bird in the afternoon that the children are meant to respond to, which means it's getting dark, get home, your mum wants you back, you know. They're in the Andaman Islands in the Indian Ocean. There's a calendar of scent, which is beautiful, and a Bolivian friend of mine who's from the Laco people in Bolivia said that his own name, Suriani, is the name of a calendar tree, because that's how they measure time through a tree. And that he was also telling me that actually the petals of certain flowers will always tell you the time, even on a cloudy day, because they will always point to exactly where the sun is, so you can always know exactly what in quotes time it is.
I suppose it must be even more true that if you live near the ocean or near a large body of water, you must be very aware of time, because they seem to respond so clearly to changes in time and calendar.
Yes, I really was so interested in this, because it's partly that on the shoreline, you know, the tide, the moment of the tide is absolutely critical. And, you know, as you say, you know, you're full of the sense of these washes of water, you know, and this huge kind of pull affected by the moon and the kind of difference between high tides and low tides. But the other thing I find very interesting is in a cultural way that the sea all around the world has always been associated with time, that Taoist thought considered that the oceans informed at creation without being exhausted. You know, Western scientists say the seas were the source of life. You know, the Jainist philosophy considered oceans of years, as they called them. There is a deep association with time and water. And so, of course, Otis Redding picked the right place, you know, sitting at the dock at bay wasting time.
Coming back to Western culture for a moment, given the way that we are in some ways forced to live with time, are there things that we do that exist outside time? I'm just thinking of the section on carnivals and festivals. You suggest that in some ways festivals don't rely on time or make it so that we don't need to rely on time?
Yes, yes. I mean, I think this is one of the reasons why festivals and carnivals have continued their sort of uproarious popularity, is because people badly need to have a sense of time which is not regulated, which is not scheduled. And also that they are deeply subversive, because they overthrow the kind of ordinary passage of time. It's like the office party where the, you know, the cleaner can cheek the company director, you know, for one day, you know, one evening. And that carnivals have this aspect of kind of revolution, I mean, contained revolution, be it said, because the whole point of it is that it lasts for, you know, for a limited duration. But I think that it's a very powerful sense that people have that for that moment, all sorts of nonsense is allowed. I mean, in Germany, there is a day which is actually called Nonsense Day, you know, and many, you know, many, many other types have this sort of glorious, kind of exuberant, sort of flirtatious attitude to time, which really just bursts out in carnival. And what I find quite sad is the way that increasingly festivals are sort of seen to be more and more enclosed. And I find it quite sad, because I think that people really need that sort of off-license time, as it were, you know, which is really sort of a kind of big time, as it were, with gusto, you know, and plenty of it.
Jay Griffiths is a journalist living in Wales. Her book is called A Sideways Look at Time. Time keeps on slipping.